Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus, this first hour of Focus, we'll be talking a bit about the underrepresentation of girls and women in technical fields like science, engineering, math, and specifically in computer science. And our guest for the program is Maria Clave. She's Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at Princeton. And has been there for the past 3 years. She's also just recently, fairly recently, been selected to become president of Harvey Mudd College. That'll be starting in July of this year. She'll, in fact, be the first woman to serve as the president. It's a liberal arts college that focuses on engineering, science, and math education. It was founded in 1955 as one of the Claremont Colleges in Claremont, California. She came to Princeton from the University of British Columbia, where she held posts including the Dean of Science, Vice President of Student and Academic Services, and also head of the Department of Computer Science. And she's here to give a talk about women and computing. This is part of the Distinguished Lecture Series in the Department of Computer Science. It'll take place this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And anyone who is certainly interested is welcome to attend. And I believe this is in the – is this in the Siebel?
It is in the Siebel Building.
Center? Okay, in the Siebel Building, and 1404 in the Siebel Building. And it is, as I say, open to the public. Anybody who would like to attend should feel welcome. Also here on the program, questions are welcome too, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, people have questions, they can call. I'm pleased to have you here. Thank you very much.
Delighted to be here, David.
Just generally speaking, the way I wanted to start out was to talk a little bit, see what you could say about the numbers of girls, young women who are becoming involved in the sciences. And it seems that this has been a concern at least for, gosh, I don't know, going back maybe 15, 20 years at least, that there was this feeling that girls were underrepresented in math, science, and engineering, computer science. And it seems that then there actually was a little bit of a bump up in the numbers. And then recently, it seems to have gone down again a little bit. And I've seen different kinds of numbers for different fields, and I'm kind of confused. So maybe you can give me a little bit of an overview.
So let me try to give you a snapshot. And the picture is sort of complicated, so bear with me for just a moment.
Sure.
So first of all, if we look at science, I started as an undergraduate in mathematics almost 40 years ago, so 1968. It's hard to believe that it's almost 40 years ago, but it is. And if we look at science, participation in areas of science has consistently increased in virtually every area. So at most universities, more than half of the undergraduates in science now are women. But the representation is not uniform across different fields. So, for example, in biology, more than half of the undergraduate majors are women. In chemistry, it's about 50-50. In mathematics, it's just under 50% women. In physics, it's about 20% women. So you can see there's a real range there. Now, if we look at engineering, at the time when I started majoring in mathematics, it was probably down around 2% women. And it has steadily increased up to about 20% women at the undergraduate level. It has plateaued at around 20%, perhaps just over 20% over about the last 10 years and has fallen off a little bit. Computer science is really an anomaly, however, because it started out in the 80s being perhaps around 35% women. It's one of the fields that's hardest to measure because sometimes it includes areas like information science or like management information systems. So the numbers are a little bit approximate. But for computer science, the way a major like it would be at UIUC, right now the percentage of women in undergraduate majors tends to be around 15%. And so that's fallen from about 35% to about 15%. And that's the only area of science and engineering where participation has fallen.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also true, and you can tell me if I've got this right, that overall, if you look at women in the sciences, that the numbers for women who are getting undergraduate degrees are pretty good, as you say, around half or maybe more than half. But then if you take a look at women who are getting advanced degrees or who work in scientific technical fields, there's still a big gap there between men and women.
So again, this is one of these things that is gradually changing, but you're mm-hmm. right, and it's often referred to as a leaky pipeline, that you have in science as a whole about 50% of the undergraduate degrees going to women, and then it falls to around 30 to 35% at the graduate level. Depending again on the discipline. So, for example, in biology, it's getting to be close to 50% of the PhDs. It's probably around 40 in the low 40% of the biology degrees. PhDs are going to women. In chemistry, it's again about like that. In mathematics, it's about 30%. In physics, it's about 20%. So, physics is actually one of the areas in which the percentage of women getting PhDs is about the same percentages women getting undergraduate degrees. But then when you go into, you know, faculty positions, again, into postdocs and then faculty positions, again, you see drop-off happening.
Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at overall at women going to the sciences, you would say, well, things aren't so bad. But then if you look specifically at particular kinds of fields, there still seem to be big gaps. So then that gets us to this question of what's going on and why should it be that, for example, we should have good numbers of women who are studying biology, but significantly fewer numbers of women who are studying physics, for example, or computer science. And if we assume that it's not a matter of ability or interest, something else is going on. And I think looking back some time, the thing that seemed to be happening, or at least one of the things that seemed to be happening, was that somehow girls, particularly when they were younger, but all the way as they became young women and women moving through school, somehow were getting the message that certain fields, things like physics, for example, or perhaps computer science, just weren't for them.
Well, let me go back to this, assuming it's not a matter of ability or interest. One of the things I've been very interested in this question, why is there this difference in terms of female representation in different fields? And so back in 1997, together with a team of people, we put together a survey for students in grades 8, 10, and 12 in high schools in the Vancouver area, which is where I was at the time. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we asked, and this was given to all students, males and females, their perceived interest, how interested they would be in taking a course in any one of 12 areas. And the 12 areas were business, biology, chemistry, math, physics, computer science, engineering, fine arts, geography, history, English, and I've probably missed out some psychology. I think that's it. But any rate, a range of different areas. And they were asked to rate on a scale of 1 to 7 how interested they were in taking a course. And then the next question was rate on a scale from 1 to 7, with 7 being high in both cases, how well you think you would do in such a course. And the three areas where boys were significantly more interested in taking courses and were thought they would do significantly better were computer science, engineering, and physics, exactly the areas where girls are underrepresented. And the areas where girls were significantly more interested and thought they would do better were English, fine arts, and psychology. Hmm. And biology, chemistry, math, business, there's very little difference in a really insignificant difference in their answers. And one of the things that was very interesting to us was that there was no difference between the answers from the grade 8 students and the grade 12 students, or the grade 10 students for that matter. Now, this course, this survey was taken by 60% of the students in the Vancouver Public School District. And at the time, we wondered whether or not it would be biased because the demographics in Vancouver were very different from in most of the rest of Canada because there's a very large Asian population. And so we also gave the same survey and in a number of other towns and cities across British Columbia, and the results were indistinguishable. So what we know is that at least as early as age 12 or 13, girls think that they're less interested in taking courses in computer science, engineering, and physics, and that they're going to do less well. Mm-hmm. So then you would ask, and this is not the only research that's shown this, and so then you would ask, why is that? And as best as we can make out, it's because they think that, let me just focus on computer science for the moment, though I suspect that the answers for engineering and physics are somewhat similar. For computer science, it seems to be that, one, they think the area is boring. Their image is that you're going to sit with your fingers on a keyboard and be doing this thing called programming that they don't really know what it is, but they know if they've seen a piece of code that they can't understand what it says. And so they think that's very boring. They think that the jobs are going to not involve any interacting with people. And they don't think that what you're going to actually do is going to make a difference in the world. I mean, they don't think that it's going to, help people get more food in Africa or increase literacy in other areas of the developing world or whatever. They don't think it's going to solve world problems. The final thing is that they think that the people who have those jobs are not the kind of person they would want to be. They think that they're antisocial and they don't have a life. And they're probably male with thick glasses,
skinny. Pocket protectors.
Exactly. Yeah. So, they have this image of, the job would be boring. The people you'd be working with would be boring. And you'd be perceived as being a boring person who's, not attractive. So that's enough to turn them off.
See, I think this is very interesting because it makes it sound like this whole business of gender and science is more subtle maybe than I would have thought, and maybe some people would have thought, that it's not simply a matter of little girls getting the idea that, this computer is not for girls. But it does have something to do with the way that they perceive the field and the people who are in the field and what the applications are. And maybe it does indeed say something about girls and how they think about themselves and what they would like to do in the world and what they would like to do for their careers and so
right.
forth. So it's a different – it seems like if that's the problem and you want to increase the numbers of girls going into computer science – then you're going to have to do something. It's not just you're going to have to tell them, no, really, it's okay. Girls can do this. It's fine for girls to do it, you're smart enough. But it's a different sort of a thing.
They know. I mean, at some level, they know that girls can do it. It's that what self-respecting girl would want to do it.
this is a PR problem for computing sciences, maybe more than it is a more general problem about education.
I think it's a very big PR program for computing sciences, and right now the Computing Research Association, which is a group that brings together people from industry and academia and government and so on, they have a project right now called the Image Project, and I happen to be on the team, and it's exactly looking at this because there really is a significant problem there. The other half of this problem now is that there's also this belief that there are no more jobs. I mean, why would you care about people going into computer science if all of the jobs are being shipped to India and China?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's not true either, but it is a huge PR problem. So between the fact that the jobs look boring and the people in the jobs look boring, we have to deal with the PR problem that people think there are no jobs in computer science. So altogether, it is a huge problem. But it's one we've got to fix because the reality is that at least from all of the predictions we can see from the Bureau of Labor and I guess it's the Bureau of Labor Statistics are that this is going to be one of the fastest growing areas over the next 10 years. And certainly anecdotally looking at certainly the students graduating from Princeton, the computer science graduates are getting jobs paying faster and paying significantly higher salaries than any of the other engineering graduates. So it still seems to be true today that there's lots of job opportunities.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Maria Clave. She's dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at Princeton. And if you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I waited a while before calling. When you first announced the topic, my first thought was, well, here we're watching at this time the Olympics. And in the Olympics, it's apparent that men and women can do some of the most, I think, bizarre and athletically challenging things, whether they compete with each other or not. Women are obviously able to do it. And in the entire sports field over the last two or three decades, say women's tennis and women's sports in general, they may not be rewarded as much, but everyone does have the sense that women can do it. And so when you describe this question of overcoming the issue of women can do science, engineering, computers, whatever, but have to decide to do it, have to have a sense that it's worth doing, do you have a feeling for why it's worked in sports so well that women are inclined to say, if I'm athletic, if I have a natural talent, I'll do what I can, see how far it gets me? Whereas in the scientific fields, they don't say just natural ability is enough. Is that outside your research or expertise? Is it a wrong analogy?
I think it's a fascinating question. It's definitely outside my expertise, but that's not going to stop me from taking a stab at it. I think part of it is that our society places so much prestige on and visibility for sports figures, frankly. And I think – so that's one thing. The second thing is and I use this all the time with my with the students that I teach. I've been teaching first-year calculus for the last couple of years at Princeton, which is I've enjoyed really a lot. And one of the beliefs that I always have to overcome is that people think that mathematical ability or scientific ability is something you're born with, whereas like a sport – there's always some natural ability, but the most important factor is practice. And so I think one of the things that really helps with sport is that people believe that it's the kind of thing that you're going to have to work very hard at to be good at it, but that if you do work hard, you've got a shot at being successful. Whereas I think, first of all, there's not a lot of visibility for being successful in science or engineering. I mean, I keep on joking about when are we going to see our L.A. engineer show or L.A. computer scientist. They're just simply not visible. But secondly, nobody sees this correlation between hard work and success.
That's an interesting point, because I was discussing with someone recently that even on television programs that feature women in highly technical or difficult fields, most often the focus is not the field and their study and their work, but the interpersonal relationships that are involved or not. And it's a highly emotional television program rather than a highly technical and skilled image that they're projecting.
I suspect that part of the reason for that is our viewers are more interested in interactions between people and emotions in general than they are in highly technical areas. I mean, it's true that they're also interested in storyline. So if you look at something like CSI, that is focusing much more on you know, what the actual plot is and so on. But, you know, to a large extent, I think all of our law shows and, you know, shows like Friends and sitcoms and so on, they really are all about people interactions. But even so, I would still love to see even one of those women or several of those women be computer scientists or engineers. And so that at least people would see that computer scientists and engineers do have a life and have emotional issues and kids and, you know, boyfriends and all of those other kinds of things.
Well, and finally, I thought immediately of sports when half an hour ago when this topic came up. Are there any other general fields in which you think the barriers have sort of been overcome? Women can do it. Women should do it. Women are rewarded personally and professionally for doing it. I'll hang up, and this is the question of if you have a problem to deal with, can you look to other places that have worked it out? The way a civil engineer would say, we have a problem in our city, is there some other city that's figured out how to do it, and how can we adapt it to our circumstance? Thanks.
So the obvious obvious area where women have over the last really 30 years, 40 years, moved into and been extremely successful is medicine. To a somewhat lesser extent, law. They certainly have been very successful in going through law school and in the early stages. I think there's particularly some of the larger law practices have seen that women are less willing to put in, you know, 80, 90 hours a week for year after year after year to become a partner. And, you know, from my perspective, that's perhaps a sane choice on their side.
Mm. Well, and of course, we know that it is very difficult. It requires many years, a lot of hard work to become a physician as well. The education process can be pretty brutal. But if again, going back, though, one can understand that if there were barriers removed, that there would be women who would perhaps choose those careers, particularly medicine, if what was really important to them was this idea that in my career I can do something good for the world. You could see that someone would say, well, okay, medicine, yes, I can do that. Law, maybe even, yes, I can do that. But then that gets us back to this idea that maybe, and I don't know if this is true. I mean, you want to be careful making these kind of generalizations. But if it tends to be important to women that in their career that they do something positive, then that gets us back to, you know, how do you persuade people that computing science, for example, is something where you can do something that is of benefit to the world?
Well, what a great lead-in question, because I was in India in January, and a couple of the major issues in India are education. In terms of universal education, it's still true that a good percentage of their rural poor do not get to go to school, and then healthcare. And again, a large percentage of the rural poor do not have access to adequate healthcare. And it's completely clear that the solutions to both of those issues are going to involve creative computer science, information technology solutions. And, from my perspective, I do want to change the world. I do want to make a difference. And I can't imagine a better field than computer science in terms of being able to do that today, because virtually every issue, whether it's energy or healthcare or education, information technology is going to play a major – using information technology creatively and effectively is going to play a major role in actually finding solutions to these issues. And the people who have studied computer science, and preferably together with some other area like biology or psychology or another area of engineering, are going to be the ones who really can make a huge difference.
Let's talk with some other people here. Our next caller is in Shelbyville, and that's on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First, thank you for your program. I never cease to be amazed at the quality of people that you have on there. First, I have an observation and then a question. I have a son who is taking computer science, and then last week called and decided that's not what he wanted to do anymore. And the reasons he gave were almost identical to the reasons your guest gave there as why girls don't take it. And it's boring and punching keys all day and kind of antisocial. And I was just wondering if she had some advice that I might give to him and might steer him back into that program. She has given some ideas here just before you talk to me.
So let me ask you, how long has he been studying computer science for?
He's 2 years into the program. He's a sophomore.
Okay. So one of the issues about the way we teach computer science, and this is not true of all colleges or universities, but it is true of, I think, the majority of them, is that we leave the applications, which tend to be particularly motivating to female students, but also to a lot of male students, until the third and fourth years.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it's not unusual for And this, I think, is just a mistake, and it is one of the things we're trying to reform, but it's going to take us a while to change it. So the first thing I would say is it often helps to get a job, even a part-time job working in another area. So, for example, I had one computer science student who worked doing the computer systems work for a psychology research faculty member. Mm-hmm. And could actually see that what he had learned in computer science was helping the research happen, and it made a difference. And so often just finding a job that you can use what you've learned already and see how it helps others can be very motivating. I've also had other students, I mean, do something as mundane as go and teach, people in a bank how to use a new system. But just the fact that they were actually working with real human beings and using the knowledge they'd learned, but using it for, you know, something that made a difference, persuaded them sort of against their will to stay in computer science because they could see it was going to be worthwhile. The other thing to look at is really very explicitly to do a double major.
Mm-hmm.
And that often makes a huge difference for students because, again, as soon as they can see that what they're doing is going to be part of something bigger, it's also very motivating. The final thing I would suggest is that he might go and talk to some faculty members who are who have some research projects that have students working on teams.
Mm-hmm.
And again, being it's this isolation bit. I mean, I wouldn't want it. All of my research projects have groups of students working in teams together. And yes, part of what they do is programming, but it's only a small part of what – well, maybe not a small part, but at most a half of what they do. And when they are programming, they can see what they're creating and why it's going to fit into something that's going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. He thinks now he wants to go into something more with automotive. And automotive manufacturing and designing and doing electronic things with cars. And he said he'd at least have a minor in computer science.
That sounds good to me.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I really appreciate it. I'm enjoying listening to you.
All right.
I'll get off the phone, get back in the truck here. I can listen to you some more.
Well, thanks for the call.
And thank you, David.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here in this first hour of Focus, and I would like to introduce again our guest for anyone who might have tuned in. Maria Clave is Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at Princeton University and has been for the past 3 years. This summer, she will be taking over as president of Harvey Mudd College in Claremont, California. She'll be the first woman to serve as president of the college. It's a liberal arts school that focuses on engineering, science, and math education. She came to Princeton from the University of British Columbia, where she held a number of posts, including the Dean of Science, Vice President of Student and Academic Services, and Head of the Department of Computer Science. She is here visiting the campus and will give a talk looking at how girls and women differ from boys and men in their uses of and attitudes towards computers and computing. And that will be this afternoon at 4 o'clock in room 1404 at the Siebel Center on the U of I campus. That's at 201 North Goodwin. It's part of the Distinguished Lecture Series of the Department of Computer Science. And anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome. It's open to the public. And, of course, here questions are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller up is in Urbana, and line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Do you have any comparative information on various European countries in regard to this topic?
I don't have the statistics right in front of me right now, but I can tell you that quite recently there was a paper published that looked at the participation by rates by women across 19 countries, including most of the countries in Europe, United States, Canada, Australia, et cetera. And there are essentially two countries where the participation rates by women are higher. One is Ireland. And the higher than they are in North America, and the other one is Turkey. Now, in Ireland, this particular paper, was only able to conjecture why the differences might be there. I have to say, in all other areas, the participation rates by women in computer science were as low as they are in North America or lower. So, in Ireland, there were two reasons that were conjectured for why the participation rates might be as high as they are. One is that most of the high school education is single sex, and because it's Catholic education, and within the U.S., we do know that there's a higher likelihood of girls going on to engineering, computer science, and physics, and so on, who have come out of single sex schools. And the other reason for Ireland was that information technology has been sort of the major economic driver in Ireland for the last decade. And so it was very much seen as the route to prosperity to major in computer science. In Turkey, the reason for the large numbers of women is that you don't get to choose what field you major in Turkey. You get assigned to fields depending on how high your scores are in certain exams. And so women are assigned to major in computer science and do very well in it. But for most of the other countries in Europe, the numbers are just as bad as they are here.
Thank you. Could I also ask, do you have any comparisons with Asian Americans and other Americans?
So I don't for the U.S. I will give you some information from the survey that we did in Vancouver. So Vancouver, in the survey we did, roughly 30% of the students spoke either Cantonese or Mandarin as their first language. And so, and our survey collected this information as part of the survey, so we were able to look at gender interests across students who were of Chinese ethnic background. Excuse me for a moment. I'm going to cough. I'm still recovering from bronchitis, but it's almost over. So first of all, we looked at the women from this group, and you know, initially I was really thrilled because their interest in computer science and engineering equaled the average male interest over the population, which I thought was amazing. And then we looked at the males, and the difference between the female and the male within the Chinese-speaking group was exactly the same as the difference between the females and the males overall. It was just shifted up by, you know, a quantum amount. And so it is true that you do see more Asian women in many parts of the country, more Asian women choosing to major in computer science than, let's say, that they're disproportionately overrepresented. But that's also true for the males as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. On to Bloomington, Indiana for the next caller. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. It seems to me that the goal of gender equity should be equal opportunity for women and not necessarily equal numbers of women. You seem to be preoccupied with getting just as many women in engineering and math as there are men. Why not concentrate on equal opportunity in these fields without worrying if fewer women choose the field? I mean, so long as women have equal opportunity, why isn't that enough?
I actually completely agree with you that the whole idea is to give equal opportunity. I actually think of it being not just equal opportunity for women, but actually equal opportunity for people with diverse interests and learning styles. So, at the moment, it's certainly true that in terms of what happens in the way we teach engineering and computer science and the way that our high school guidance counselors and our parents and our culture just present things that for women and many other groups, so for instance, let's say artists and poets, there are lots of things in our culture that say you're not likely to do well in computer science or engineering. And so it's actually, you'd be surprised, but it's quite common still for girls in high school to have a teacher who will tell them that girls aren't good at math and science. And, you know, personally, I really didn't believe this until I started interviewing girls. And, the first time a girl told me this, I just couldn't believe it. And then I asked girls around the room, and there must have been about 60 girls in the room at this point. They were juniors in high school. And how many of them have had a teacher at some point say something explicitly about the fact that girls were not as good at math and science? And 80% of the girls raised their hands. So, you know, when we talk about equal opportunity, I completely agree with this. If we can just create an environment where everybody is encouraged to succeed, independent of gender or race or whether they love dance or anything else, I'd be happy.
Okay. You know, I agree with that the girls shouldn't be discouraged. So long as they have equal opportunity, they also shouldn't be discouraged. I agree with you, and thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, it seems to me this is an important point because I guess I was thinking that we had made some progress in this particular area, that it had been noted in the past that it certainly was a problem, that part of it was a perception problem. Maybe girls thought themselves, either they weren't interested in math or they thought, oh, well, I'm no good at that. But that there were also girls were getting messages, maybe explicit like that, or maybe just the fact that they didn't see a lot of women who were, say, mathematicians or physicists or computer science scientists. And that's part of the deal, too. I mean, you have to have models, you know. But it sounds as if from what you're saying is that there are still some explicit – girls are still getting some very explicit messages that says, you're a girl, that means you're not going to do good in math. You can't be a scientist. You're not going to be a physicist because you're a girl.
So I think it's certainly the case that there are girls growing up today in North America who are not getting that message. So there is progress. There's no question. I mean, I have met young women who have, you know, I after this happened to me the first time, because I really thought like you by the time, I mean, I remember in 1990 doing one of these seminars with high school girls and getting told this. And I was absolutely sure that it couldn't be happening in 1990. Well, now it's, you know, 2006, and now I routinely ask this question. And so there certainly are lots of young women making it to university not having been told by anyone that they couldn't do it, but they're not the majority.
Yeah. Wow.
So there's progress happening, but I just recently saw the results of a survey taken by entering college freshman students entering private universities and looking at the percentage of the male students and the female students who thought that they were above average in terms of their ability in and then a whole bunch of different things. And across the board, fewer women think they're above average in mathematical ability than men. And yet we know in terms of the way performance is happening these days, it's just not true. So there is still a perception among women that they're not as good at math and science as the males are, despite the fact they may have done as well in courses, on their SAT exams, on all of these kinds of things.
Yeah. How significant do you think it is, or is there a significant issue with girls and young women not having role models, not seeing other women who are professionals in computer sciences or who are professors or teachers, and that's part of the issue?
I'm sure that's part of the issue. And I mean, I certainly hear about it from students in a case where they've had female faculty members who've taught them and, you know, have written to me and said how much of a difference it made. I know that for myself, that when I was pregnant the first time, I had never met another mother who had continued to work in any kind of professional job, not just as an academic or as a researcher or whatever, who'd gone right back to work after she had her first child. And I was terrified. I mean, I knew I was going to do it because I wanted to keep on doing research, and computer science research moves so quickly that, you know, taking a couple of years out is not really a good idea. And I remember when I finally met, when my son was about 2.5 months old, I met a professor of French literature who had gone right back to work after both of her children. I met her kids, who were 5 and 8, and I remember going like, it's possible. It can be done. It's really okay. And so, I mean, it's one of the reasons I talk a lot about having kids and having an ambitious career, and that it all works. And my daughter is actually 21 today and is in South Africa on a semester abroad. And my son's almost 24, so, you know, they're grown up now. But I remember I still have this woman professor that I met as a friend, and it meant so much to me. So I know it means a lot to young women seeing other women who have been okay, who've made it.
We're moving into about our last 10-15 minutes. Real quick, let me introduce again our guest, Maria Clave. She's dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at Princeton University. And we're talking about women in science, particularly women in computer science. Questions welcome. We do have the lines full, though. If you try to call now, you will get a busy signal. So let's work through some of these callers. We'll get in as many as we can. And next up is someone in Oakwood on our line 3. Hello.
Yes, I want to say I'm very, very much enjoying your discussion of this. Back in the 70s, when I taught computer science at a university, we consistently had more women than men. And there was some further interesting differences between the women and men. The women consistently scored, well, not every one of them, but I mean as a group they scored above the median as opposed to the boys. But there was another interesting difference, and it had to do with being in the 70s or 60s or 50s, whatever. Some of the boys would sort of catch fire in computer science, and they'd be up all night, and you had to counsel them to be sure to pass their other courses. And I've seen more than a couple flunk out because they didn't pay attention to anything but computer science. They would just really go at it. Now, the girls didn't do that. You didn't find a girl doing that, and one of the reasons was they didn't want to go to the labs at night unescorted. It was a peculiar thing. I don't think that would have any impact now, but nonetheless, in the regular classwork, I mean, so there'd be a few boys that were just outstanding, but as a group, the girls tended to do better in computer science, and we consistently had more girls than boys in it, or men, women than men, I guess I should say.
So let me just say that it's still probably true that the women who study computer science tend to be less obsessive about it than the male students, and sometimes, even though they may be doing just as well or as the male students. And it's also true that all the studies I've seen, the women who do go into computer science do at least as well as the men and often perform on the medians often slightly higher or more than slightly higher. So I think there's a lot of that that's still true. The final thing I'll say is that women are still don't want to walk to computer labs or other kinds of labs alone late at night, and that really has to do with safety issues on college campuses.
Of course, they don't have to go to labs necessarily. They can work on a computer in their dorms and so forth.
That's definitely much more true than it was in the 70s.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the call. Okay. Let's go to Urbana, line number one, for the next. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I have a friend who teaches academically gifted children in North Carolina, and he basically, at the high school level, what he does is he reviews records for the instructors already there. And he said something real interesting to me about a year ago that I was asking what the composition of his students are, and he said, well, 50-50 up to about the sixth grade, women, you know, boys, girls, and then it starts to trail off, that the girls sort of just fade out. I don't know whether they give up or – he said, I don't know if that's indicative. I think you were saying earlier how you have a 50% student load in engineering and stuff like that at certain universities. Is that that seems like a pretty equal situation to me.
So the reason that you tend to see girls fading out of the gifted student programs after about grade six is that it becomes socially unacceptable to be a gifted student for a female. Mm-hmm. And there are fewer, let's say, gifted females who don't also have the social skills to get along in high school and not look like they're gifted than there are males.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you, when you're talking about women in science, are you going to the doctoral level? Are you talking about, because I know a lot of people who work in laboratories or who have master's degrees, and I think that I consider them working in science, but they had no interest in a doctorate. I don't know why. I've never asked. It's none of my business. But is that what you're implying, or is that what you're saying that they should be, the pursuit should be to the goal to get a doctorate or an MD or whatever?
No, I mean, we look at the numbers at the undergraduate level, at the master's level, and the PhD level, and they're all important. So, for instance, in computer science, there are many students who just do a bachelor's degree and then go on and have a career in technology, and they really don't need to do a master's degree or a doctorate. And so we're just as concerned about the percentage of students doing that, same for many engineering areas. For some other areas like biology, it's very hard to get a job working in a biotech company or, you know, doing research without at least a master's degree and more likely now a PhD and a postdoc.
Yeah.
So just depending on the discipline, an undergraduate degree can be enough or it really does matter that you get a doctorate.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Indiana is next, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. First time you started talking about some of those parameters about girls doing this and doing that, I guess I was fortunate enough two times. Early childhood, I sat next to a girl who we, in a sense, you know, challenged. You know, she was pretty good. I just remember that. And then sometime in college, I came across a girl in a bacteriology course that just had an incredible grasp of mathematics, but she was a biology major, which always, you know, sort of gee whiz, I'm sure the math department I can get a hold of her, but that's not the way it went. I guess my general question overall is, this has some relationship to the nurture-nature problem, I'm sure, but I don't know exactly whether anybody's looked at that or thought about it or whether it's worthwhile or what. Certainly, if let's say the natures are the same gene-wise for boys and girls, and you have this out-of-shape curve, you know, in one respect for the girls and you don't for the boys, that it must be the nurturing going on. So I agree with you pretty much what's going on. This seems going to be an awful long-range thing. You talk about still finding girls who are told that they're just not good at those kinds of things. Unfortunately, where I'm from, it's now very cool for large groups of kids to think it's very, very cool to be dumb. And the only thing that counts sort of is, you know, what kind of clothes you wear, and some of them are cutting off their future. You know, I've been talking to myself silly to a couple of nephews, but I don't know if it'll ever take, but it's just part of it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, you can comment on that any way you like.
Well, I've got to say, I think that even when I was so I'm 54 and a half, and even when I was in high school, there were an awful lot of kids who thought it was very cool to be dumb. So I'm not sure that this is something really new. And one of the things I've, I think our society does need to make it cooler to work hard on intellectual activities. And this is a cultural thing that's really important, and we're not going to address our math and science scores or anything else until we do change this as a culture. So I agree with you.
All right. Let's talk with a caller in Belgium nearby, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. When I went to university, I was a chemist. I tried to be a chemist, and there were very few women in that. As life went along, I ended up changing that and went into the trades. And if you think there are few women in science, how many women concrete finishers do you think you know? Very, very few. I know one. You can look at plumbers, same way. Electricians, pretty much the same way. And my chosen profession, which is cabinet making, occasionally you come across a woman, but very, very rarely. Where do women work when you think about it, you know? They seem to be relegated to some trades that you just don't see them, and at least I don't come around them very often. Shouldn't it be a little bit more broad for females to be involved in every occupation? Obviously, there are a few, like the concrete finisher. This woman I know is a rather large woman, and she can handle the work, but there's limitations there. But in the cabinet trade, it's not difficult at all for a woman to do the work.
I think that's a really great point. In fact, when I lived in British Columbia, there were a number of associations to encourage women to go into more of the trades, and you know, a number of women working really actively on that front. And I completely agree with you. It's not just engineering and science where women are underrepresented. There are a lot of other really great occupations with great opportunities where women aren't represented. And you know, part of it is I think that they. You probably almost never have a guidance counselor say to a female student, you know, you could be a great cabinet maker.
Precisely. And though any more, you see a few more of them, especially on the West Coast and around the San Francisco area seems to be a very large area for female woodworkers anymore. They seem to have an area there. Well, the College of the Redwoods, which is in Fort Bragg, California, pushes more towards women some, but even any of these places, they just men seem to tend to get into them more because of the traditionality of the situation, I think. Hey, it's really a shame because it just could be handled. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. We're coming down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to give you the chance to talk. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time, but I'm curious to have you talk a little bit about the differences between, say, girls and boys, and how they think about computers, how they use computers, what they want out of them. Are there some interesting differences that you see?
So, you know, I have to admit that when I first started studying children and computers, which was in late 1992, early 1993, I didn't expect to see a lot of differences, and it just shows how naive I was, because the very first study we did, which was in a science museum over a summer, and we put together an exhibit that had computer games and video games and also a construction area where kids could build and tell researchers about the kinds of computer games they'd like to build. I couldn't believe how different girls and boys were. So just to summarize very quickly, and you know, I haven't been doing this research now for about 3 years, so it could have totally changed in the last 3 years. I sort of doubt it, but mm-hmm. you know, just want to make it clear that I haven't been sitting in school classrooms watching children interact with computers since 2002. They just are different. So, for example, boys are much more persistent at getting access to computers. Girls are more hesitant in going after them. Boys when are more likely to want to play computer games. They're likely to be very competitive when they play the computer games. They want to win as quickly as they possibly can. Girls also play computer games, but they're more likely to sort of take their time in playing them, to be more likely to play them with a friend. They are more likely to spend time doing iChat or surfing the web than boys are. So they're more likely to do a variety of things on the computers. If you look at what they like when they play computer games, they like different things. Boys tend to like fast action, violence, adventure, sports, and so on. Girls also like challenge and like adventure, but they're more likely to be interested in the characters and storyline. It's just different. And it's not that one is good and the other is bad. It's just different. Now, of course, these are generalizations, and you know, I, for example, was a girl and who liked to play competitive things. I still enjoy playing video games and things like that. So, I mean, there are lots of females who like male-oriented games, and lots of males who like female-oriented games, and so on. So, it's, you know, these are generalizations, but yes, on average, you will see lots of differences.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop, but for people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, our guest, Maria Clave, Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science, will talk more about this subject, differences between girls and women and boys and men and their use of and attitudes toward computers, in a talk titled Gender Lies in Video Games, The Truth About Females and Computing. That's this afternoon at 4 o'clock in room 1404 of the Siebel Center on the U of I campus. That's on North Goodwin Avenue. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.